This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Ruth Ellis's legacy in Detroit is strong. An out lesbian and staunch LGBT and African-American civil rights advocate, Ellis passed away 20 years ago at the age of 100. The Ruth Ellis Center in Detroit continues her work and recently broke ground on a new facility that's going to house and help homeless LGBTQ youth, with a mural of Ruth Ellis herself right on the building. With us to talk about the work is Jerry Peterson, the executive director of the center. Jerry, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much for this opportunity to update you on our project.
What are you seeing among young people living on the street right now?
Well, one of the unique aspects is that young people say to us, how is this any worse than every other day of our lives? And I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the complexity and the trauma and the violence and rejection that many of the young people we serve who are experiencing homelessness and other barriers to success, this is their day-to-day existence. And so in some ways, they struggle to see how COVID makes their life any more complex.
How would you rate the risk of COVID compared with some of the other health threats that your clients might be thinking about or that you're trying to talk to them about?
Again, it's counterintuitive to most of us, but because this is such an isolated group of young people, which normally is a real detriment and it's something that we are concerned about a lot, that level of isolation from the general population seems potentially to have some kind of protective effect, that we're not seeing major instances of COVID-19 among the young people that we're serving.
Jerry, in the past, a heavy percentage of homeless youth are part of the LGBTQ community, precisely because their families could not or did not accept them. Society's gone through some pretty major changes in the past couple of decades. Gay marriage is legal, and some protections have taken shape around education and housing and employment. Not to say that the threats have evaporated, but it is a little different world out there. Have you observed any changes in the lives of the center's clientele?
The change is indirect, not direct. And what I mean by that is that there's a lot more funding and resources available to provide the services that our young people are looking for and need to stabilize their lives. Many of those benefits to the LGBTQ community in over the last decade, frankly, have primarily benefited white, middle, and upper middle class individuals. If you're living in poverty, you don't have a lot of resources, and you don't have a strong social support network, the levels of isolation and fear and violence are still really pretty high and haven't changed dramatically.
So what's the mission of the housing center and health clinic that you recently broke ground for?
So REC Center, Ruth Ellis at Claremont Center, is a 43-unit permanent supportive housing project. First and foremost, it will expand the availability of quality, affordable housing in the city of Detroit to people who are experiencing chronic homelessness. And so while our target group for the building will be LGBTQ young people, 18 to 25, experiencing homelessness, everyone who is referred to the building as a potential resident will have to go through Detroit's continuum of care and be assessed for chronic homelessness, and it will be determined whether or not permanent supportive housing is the best option for them. But the reason that we selected permanent supportive housing as the best option for the young people that we serve is that because of the layers of trauma and violence that they have experienced in their lives, any housing option for them that only provides intensive support for 12 to 18 months is not long enough support for them to overcome the negative impacts of the trauma in their lives. And so they may get temporary shelter, temporary assistance and support, but they cycle on into their own in market rate housing too quickly and end up falling into homelessness again.
I should probably explain that supportive housing refers to a very intentional approach that helps provide assistance with addiction issues, chronic mental health issues, or sometimes physical conditions, the kind of things that have driven people out of traditional housing and onto the streets to begin with. So what you're talking about is a system that provides caseworkers, case management, medical care, and things like that, right?
Correct. Absolutely. That's exactly what we mean. And that it's non-time limited, meaning that, you know, we're hoping that 60% of residents will actually, within 3 to 5 years, will actually set goals, cycle through, and be in market rate housing perhaps within 3 to 5 years. But for many of the people who would reside in this project, it will take an extended period of time for them to be ready to be on their own in market rate housing.
What do you observe happening to young people who've spent time unhoused? What happens to them as they get older? Do many of them end up in a chronically homeless state?
Well, unfortunately, the data available for Southeast Michigan or anywhere in Michigan is extremely limited. So it's impossible to really say what the percentage is. We do know nationally that of all the people who are living on the street or in living, experiencing homelessness, at least 2 out of 5 identify as LGBTQ, which is a much higher rate than for any other part of the population. And that's especially LGBTQ young people 18 to 25. So it's a much younger population than people think of when they think of chronic homelessness.
Sometimes what helps people who are living on the margins stay housed is having a social safety net, people who they can talk to, people who can drive them to a meeting, or who are willing to lend $200 for groceries and rent. How do you help people work on those relationships?
So for many of the young people who come to the Ruth Ellis Center, they are involved in sort of an underground family network called the ballroom scene. And the ballroom scene is organized in families of choice. There can be anywhere from 5 to 8 or 10 or more young people who are organized in the family, and their moms and aunties and uncles. And it is a very, very powerful social network that is the primary way that they support themselves and each other, being so isolated from the mainstream of the population here in the city of Detroit. And so what we really wanted to do in building this project is that, for example, because of those family relationships, if someone is homeless and is able to get housing, they might invite 5 or 6 of their family members to move in with them. And then a landlord gets upset and there's too many people in a 1-bedroom apartment or 2-bedroom apartment. And so there's eviction and cycling. And there's a lot of housing instability. What we are doing is building a project where the units themselves, studios and 1-bedrooms, are relatively small, 400 and 600 square feet, but there are large family gathering spaces and a lot of space in the building that really promotes that family of choice coming together and being able to support one another and be together, cook meals together in a full kitchen. And that's a critical aspect of the fullness of what it means for someone to be able to adjust to housing and stabilize their lives and be ready to move on.
Jerry Peterson is the executive director of the Ruth Ellis Center. Jerry, thank you so much for talking to us.
Absolutely.
We wanted to hear a bit more of what Jerry Peterson was talking about when he spoke of the social networks that keep people afloat. Liliana Reyes is someone the Ruth Ellis Center has helped, and she in turn has dedicated her life to helping other LGBTQ people of color through the center and her chosen family, and her work in a number of different ways. Liliana Reyes, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you so much. I'm excited.
Will you tell us a little bit about what brought you to the Ruth Ellis Center?
So the Ruth Ellis Center was like home. So I started my career in nonprofit fairly young. I went to college. I transitioned. I'm a Chicana Mexican trans woman. So I transitioned at 17. So almost right entering college, I transitioned. And I went through a lot. And so Ruth Ellis was one of the places that I would go to seek safety, to seek a space. There were people like me when my family really wasn't my supporters. And so when I started my nonprofit career, I never let go of the Ruth Ellis Center. And I went pretty high in my nonprofit career, where I was interim director and ED of many different things in nonprofits. The Ruth Ellis Center had an opening, and I wanted to be in a space where I worked mostly with people that look like me, Black and brown, trans people, Black and brown, LGBT people. And Ruth Ellis has always focused on the people that have difficulty getting services other places. So I came home.
You know, there's going to be some new information here for people who may not be familiar with how chosen families can be so critical to young people who are living houseless or just in a state of transition themselves. Could you talk a little bit more about the concept of chosen family and why it's so critical?
Absolutely. So sometimes folks who may not ever be LGBT or not have ever been socially isolated or not supported, a lot of people think it's just a great group of friends. And I want people to know it's not just a great group of friends. When I transitioned at 17, my parents were not eager. They were Mexican Catholic folks. They were loving, but it just was not hitting home for them. And I moved out. I had some safe places, but not places where I felt like I could be me. And if it wasn't for my chosen family, my gay family, I probably wouldn't have survived. And that's for many, many, many people. And so way back in the day, 40s, 50s, 60s, maybe even earlier, when brown and Black LGBT people came out, because we tend to come out really young, a lot of our supportive systems way back in the day didn't support us to the extent that they support us now. And there weren't as many public resources. And so a lot of them were homeless, houseless at 11, 12, 13, 14. And some of them died on the street. Some of them went through addiction. And what seemed to happen is the older LGBT people who have been through that struggle, who were a little more stable. And by stable, I don't necessarily mean they found great jobs, because discrimination and racism was still there, but they were able to survive. Their resilience was really strong. And so they took on younger kids and they became their children. They became their mothers, their fathers, and their extended family when there wasn't any biological family. Gay families and chosen families are still ever so much important. And it does look different when you talk about Black and brown LGBT people and white LGBT people. Some of the reason chosen family happened is because of the racism that Black and brown LGBT people experienced. And so for me, I'm mother to lots of kids. And for some of them, I am the mother that is in their life at this moment. And for some of them, I've been the only mother in their life for a long time. Their families may not support them, and I've housed them, I feed them, I try to give them love and guidance. I'm not just a really great friend, I am their mother. And I'm their emergency contact. I'm the first person they call when something happens. I owe it to my children to be better than I could ever be, so that they know that LGBT Black and brown person can do it.
I have yet to meet a parent who didn't want to get their brag on. Will you tell us about some of your kids?
Absolutely. I love my babies. I love my babies with all my heart. So a lot of my kids are also in the House of Ebony. And my son is the Midwest father, which means that of all the Midwest, he kind of holds all the chapters. So I want to make sure that I support him. My daughter is also in the House of Ebony. So my son is a gay Black man. One of my daughters is a Black trans woman, and she walks in the ballroom scene. She also does social justice work. I have another daughter who's a mother in the South for Ebony. She's a Black and Native trans woman. And honestly, a lot of the really big and upcoming legends or really popular folks in the scene are my children. And a lot of them come from the Flint area or the Detroit area. And they also work in social justice, so they're really changing the world while they're doing this. I have kids in North Carolina and Tennessee who are hairdressers and own their own boutiques and are social workers and HIV prevention case managers. And I have children who are very, very, very successful in the scene and in quote-unquote real life.
Liliana, you alluded to the fact that while family is what helps people living on the street get through their situation, that a lot of times it's not easy even for people who've made it and they're in their 40s and, you know, might be holding down some kind of work. And what we're talking about here is a lack of social structure for a lot of LGBTQ people. How do you think about the end game for everybody that you try to help at the center and everybody who the new supportive housing facility is going to help? I mean, are we talking about a house in the suburbs and a job, or is it still just about keeping people alive?
So what our goal is to help people figure out what their success looks like, what their value to themselves looks like, and then help create that. And that could look like helping people find a house in the city of Detroit. We need to be thoughtful about what success looks like. If we're buying into gentrification, if we're buying into racism, I don't believe that that's success. And so to me, success is being very thoughtful, is creating more artists and creating more entrepreneurs, young, Black, brown, LGBT entrepreneurs in the city of Detroit, bringing life back to the city through activism, through thought, through art. And for many of them, they tell us who and what they want. And sometimes it's to create some stabilizing spaces until they get to that dream and hope mindset. And so for that is getting them off the streets. But you also have to remember that because this is a community, if you place a community member far from their social context, they become socially homeless. And that's really scary. When people are used to a community helping them and making them feel good, and then people house them really far out, one need is met, but the other is not. And social isolation is a huge issue with suicide and many other things. And so our goal has always been to create safety for people, and whatever their success looks like, to kind of help that along. And so that's kind of what we do with our programs. With PSH, we went into the community, and it was a difficult process because the city of Detroit has its rules on how you can interact and all of this stuff, but we did our best to go into the community, to be thoughtful, to have conversations, so that people knew who we were. And we hope by mimicking that, that we show the folks that we serve that they too should be thoughtful about the community that they live in. Because some of the things that other people think are just regular thoughts or regular actions are not. And those, what I kind of call them housing soft skills, are things that people have to learn. And if people are in generational houselessness or generational housing instability, where do they learn that? And so we try to help them with basically, like, don't have 12 people on a Monday night at 2 a.m. and have the music really loud, just to be really thoughtful. And for some people, they're like, well, yeah, but for some communities, that's a norm. And so our goal is always to help them be better, be themselves and be authentically better, but they have to tell us what that looks like.
Liliana, we're going to let you go, but before we do, tell us a little bit about what the holidays look like for you and maybe how you're going to be spending them this year.
The holidays are rough this year. COVID has changed everything. I think this year I'm going to be spending time with my biological father and some chosen family at my new house. But it's not the same. People are separated. People are scared. It's rough. Also, my organization, not Ruth Ellis, but the other one that I run, Trans Sisters of Color Project, will probably be doing some Christmas delivery bags to keep the girls' spirits up.
Liliana Reyes is the executive director of Trans Sisters of Color and also works at the Ruth Ellis Center. And we reached her at home in Detroit. Liliana, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.